This conference is being recorded.
Hi, welcome. Glad you could make it to the Happy About teleseminar series. This week we're featuring Cyril Ryan, author of the book Moving from Vision to Reality. Happy About books are available at happyabout.info. We are always looking for authors who are interested in writing, and we certainly have a whole series of interesting books. So please, when you get a moment, take a look at happyabout.info, and we have both consumer and business books to look at. Cyril, welcome. Great to have you today.
Thank you, Mitchell.
So, Cyril, you have a book called Moving from Vision to Reality. And before we start talking a little bit about the book, can you talk about you? Why are you the right person to be writing this book?
I'm actually moving from vision to reality as we speak. So I've run with several visions in the past and running with a couple of visions right now, one a nonprofit Christian ministry and one is a business. And there's a lot to learn as we run with the vision, and also wanted to share my heart so that others who have similar visions can run with it. Another thing I have noticed is people have a lot of dreams in their hearts, and but they never act on it. And I really wanted to help them take that next step.
Actually, let's just look at that one for a second. How many people, or what percentage of the population do you think has a dream, has a vision, and doesn't act on it?
I would say everyone has a dream. If you really talk to people and spend a quality time with them, you'll find out that they have a dream in their heart, but they don't act on it for different things. I mean, for fear of failure, it could be fear of not having the enough funding to do it and stuff like that. So I would say everyone has a dream, but only a few act on it.
So what percent? I know I'm sort of narrowing in, but what percent of the population do you think acts on their dreams?
I would say it is less than 10%.
Wow. I would love to get feedback from people. Do me a favor. If you have questions you want to ask Cyril, send me an email at info@happyabout.info, and I will make sure that I look for the look for your questions and ask them during this period, and then we'll have an open mic session in 20-30 minutes. Less than 10%. That's amazing. So, Cyril, you've done some really interesting things in your life. Can you give us a little bit of background on you before we get going?
Sure. I started my career in sales, believe it or not, after my bachelor's in electrical engineering, and I was selling CAD/CAM software back in Bombay, now called Mumbai, for a company called Godrej. And people were wondering why I took up a sales job after my electrical engineering degree. But anyway, that's how I started my career. Then came to the U.S., found it to be a little bit narrow, came to the U.S. in 91 for my master's in electrical engineering, finished that, and then started my career here in the U.S. as a chip designer for 4 years. Then again, business was always on my heart, and so I moved into marketing as I was pursuing my MBA at Santa Clara, and in the same company I was at, and then started my entrepreneurial venture in 2001. And here I am with another venture in entrepreneurship, also started a nonprofit in the meanwhile, wrote a book, have done a lot of things. I'm having fun, I can tell you that.
Now, one of the things you did recently that was terribly impressive from my perspective is you went to Africa to speak for 3 weeks?
Oh, yeah. That was a very interesting invitation by chairman of the Kenya prayer team. I was introduced to him through a common friend, and he got hold of my book, and he was really happy that he could be adopting this book in his Bible college. Actually, he had me inaugurate his Bible college in Western Kenya, and they are adopting my book as curriculum for training leaders in Africa. It was a very interesting trip. Did 4 cities in 2 weeks, actually it was 2 weeks, and spoke to more than 300 leaders. It was my first trip to Africa and really enjoyed the trip, and they are asking me to come back. And I'm getting invitations from Uganda also, so next time when I go to Africa, I'll probably visit Uganda too.
Oh, nice. So let's talk about your book. And once again, it's Moving from Vision to Reality. You could buy it on Amazon, most of ebook channels. Also happy about that info. It's available both in physical form and ebook form. One of the things you talk about are strategies. There are actually 10 strategies for personal leadership development. Do you want to talk about a couple of those?
Sure. I think the key to leadership is knowing who you are. I think it's a self-discovery process, and that's the key to leadership, because once you know what your purpose is, then you can run with it. And this is the way I define leadership in my book. Leadership is first discovering yourself and your purpose, then influencing and inspiring others to join hands with you to turn that vision into reality. Yes, it's a mouthful for a definition, but leadership is a complex topic. And for me, the key is to discover who you are, discover your purpose, and then once you're passionate about that, you influence others to join hands with you to turn it into reality. And obviously, turning it into reality is the key there, because that's why leadership is needed.
So let's start with discover who you are. How do people go about doing that?
That's a very interesting question, and we cannot put it in a box, but few things I know are basically, what are the dreams in your heart since your childhood? And what are the dreams which keep coming back to you and you have never said yes to it, or you never acted upon it? And from the biblical perspective, we have to go back to the manufacturer and the creator, because let's say you have a challenge with your DVD player, you want to find the purpose of something, you go back to the manufacturer. So from the biblical perspective, you go back to God to find your purpose.
Okay, so let's say you know who you are, and I have to think about, for me personally, there are a number of ways to figure. The way I do it personally, I just try to experiment, right? I try to start a business or a calling or an activity that will help achieve some of the dreams I had, like you said, and then do it and see if I like it or not. And I think that's probably what drives for me. What are some of the things that worked for you, Cyril? How did you know that this was it for you?
See, the thing is, for me personally, even in my high school days, I knew I would be an entrepreneur. You know, it was just in my heart. And even as I was graduating here from Mississippi State with my electrical engineering degree, I was telling people and other fellow students that I will be an entrepreneur soon. So it is in your heart. In my case, at least, that was that's what happened. And then it is about finding the right opportunity to go about it.
Got it. So you talk about 10 leadership strategies. Are these all strategies that you've implemented and developed over time yourself, or have you picked them up for others? Tell me about the 10 strategies.
See, basically, I really think each one of us should be pursuing consciously to develop ourselves as leaders, because it doesn't happen without our effort or without us really taking action. And these strategies I've learned over a period of years, learning from others, learning from books, some of them developed on my own, learning from the Bible, and so on and so forth. So I can definitely share more. I just shared the first one is knowing who you are. Second one is plan, set goals, and execute. You know, I think that's the key. Once you know what you need to accomplish and what your purpose is, you need to have a life plan. You cannot just go about in a flock, as I call it, because typically people feel comfortable just like birds in a flock, to be in a flock, but they don't want to be an eagle. To be a leader, sometimes you have to be an eagle. Sometimes you'll have to just fly alone and see the vision that you see, because not many will be able to see it. And that's why leadership is needed, to inspire the vision in others so that they can see it and run with you. And for example, in terms of planning, there is a quote which comes to mind, and this is a quote by President of Lincoln University, and he said, "Your life cannot go according to plan if you have no plan." So I think it's key for us to have a plan in place and know where we are going, you know. And another quote is, which is really key, by Donald Lade, former Secretary of Defense, He says, you will get more things done if you will only crack the whip at yourself. And I think that's the key. The first thing about leadership is self-discipline. We need to crack the whip at ourselves before we try to lead others. And I think it's key to have a plan, set goals, and also measure whether we are executing the plan. A story comes to mind, which is by J.P. Morgan. Actually, this is a true story. A friend of J.P. Morgan approaches him and says, I have this wonderful secret in this envelope, but it will cost you $25,000 if I have to show it to you. So he says, okay, show it to me. If I like it, I'll write you the check or I'll pay you $25,000. So he slips to him a very simple piece of paper, and what is on the piece of paper is this. There are two things. One is, to be successful, these are the things you need to do. The number one point is, write down what you need to do on a daily basis, and the number two is, actually do them. And he takes the slip of paper, hands him $25,000. So anyway, the point I want to make is, it's not only about planning and setting goals, but it's about execution. And that's the hardest part. I think planning and setting goals, all of us do. And we probably set new goals every beginning of the year, and at the end of the year we find maybe we have not accomplished all that we set out to do. So I think that's really key to be successful.
So it sounds to me like a key or a terribly important element to you is just writing it down.
Yes, writing it down, and then be accountable. Have accountability partners, maybe in your small group or your friends, and say, this is what I'm setting out to do, and hold me accountable. And for example, I have accountability partners for my book reading, and at least I report to them what I have read. And that really helps, because we can keep encouraging each other to read more books. And that's actually the third point I wanted to make, is read leadership books, read autobiographies of different leaders. And that really challenges us and inspires us, helps us to run the race that we need to run, and also tells us how the leaders who have gone before us have done a phenomenal job in executing their visions and their purpose.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just flipped open the book, and I'm listening to you talk, and I'm looking at the book, and I just you know, I forgot how good of a book this was. And what's interesting is the way you've developed your structures is around your seven steps.
Mm-hmm.
And let me I'm sure you have your book open, but let me read those, and you're going to hear one word that goes through six of the seven steps, and that one word is vision. So first step is find your purpose and catch the vision. Second one, decide to act and write the vision. Third one, build a team to accomplish the vision. Fourth one, manage the team and foster innovation. That's the only one without the vision in there, so I'll have to ask you about that. Fifth one is believe in the vision. Sixth one is run with the vision. And seventh one is hang on to the vision. And each of your chapters covers each of these steps.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me on step four, manage the team and foster innovation. Tell me a little bit more about that, given that didn't have the, obviously you have the vision in mind, but tell me what you mean by that one.
Basically, it needs a team to make it happen. I think that's the key. We cannot do it alone. And John Maxwell says, if you have a Mount Everest dream, then you need a Mount Everest team. So, but if your dream is a Mount Everest dream and you have a Mickey Mouse team, we cannot get it done. So I think the key is to have a very strong team with you. And it is hard to put together a team. I'm not saying it's very easy. And we cannot start with a dream team. We start with the team we have, and we develop the people. We find new people, and we continue to run the race there. And of course, the key is to manage the team effectively, to communicate effectively, and also foster innovation. The key there is, it's not about just managing, but creating an environment of creativity and helping people to think on their own. And people want to think on their own, but with the right environment. And another concept comes to mind, which comes from another author, is this guy used to run a very large corporation, and his goal in life was just to take one decision every year. And that tells us that how much delegation he practices. And again, also encouraging innovation and helping people to think. It's the concept of used by 3M and Google, where engineers and employees at 3M have like 15% of their time to do projects on their own. And Post-it came out of that, for example. And now it is raking in billions of dollars in revenues. So the key is to foster innovation, help people to be creative, and allow them to be creative. Don't penalize failure. Of course, continuous failure has to be penalized, but don't penalize failure if it was a tough project that the group was working on. In fact, reward failure so that they can actually go for the stars. And I think the key challenge that we see in different organizations is failure is penalized. So what happens is you crush innovation. You are not allowing people to innovate, and now everybody is defensive. They want to be successful, and the output is mediocre.
Got it. Interesting. So I'm trying to think the best way to pull the team together is to have an amazing vision. So mm-hmm. It stems back to driving that vision. Now, how do you get, this seems pretty obvious to me, but tell me, how do you go about pulling the team together once you've got your vision? What do you do? What are your steps?
I think there are various strategies, and different team members come in different ways. One of them, which I have tried, is basically a vision casting session. Invite, first of all, figure out what you need. I think that's the key. And what kind of people do you need?
Oh, hey, Cyril, are you on a speakerphone, or are you speaking directly into the...
Yes, I'm on a speakerphone.
If you don't mind, it'd be much better.
Okay, no problem.
Information from somebody.
Sure. One thing I've tried in the past is a vision casting session, which is also very effective because this is the session where you cast the vision, you invite the people you think can help you and have a heart for a similar vision. Because bottom line is not everybody needs to start an organization, but if you have a heart to do a particular project, then you can always align with a vision that is being casted or a vision a friend of yours is running with. Because the bottom line is you want to be involved in a certain type of a project, and if you are aligned with that vision, then you could accomplish your purpose. So vision casting is definitely true. Sometimes it is also one-on-one and sharing about what the vision can accomplish. Also painting the picture of the end result, because that really helps to understand what can be accomplished, how much impact can be had, how can we change this world, you know. I think that's the key. The vision has to be inspiring. The leader has to communicate effectively. The vision should be compelling, of course. And secondly, the vision should connect to the heart. Basically, the leader is connecting to the hearts. You know, and once you connect with the heart of the person, once you connect with their purpose, then you have them on board.
Got it. Interesting. But that certainly helps. And I'm just every time you say something, I'm sort of internalizing it and figuring out, you know, the things that I do that are successful and the things that I do that don't work. I think one of the things you talked about, and you do this in the book, and you mentioned a little bit up front, is talking about the difference between a leader and a manager. Mm-hmm. And that's worth spending a couple minutes on.
Sure. I think the key to understand about a leader and a manager is the leader will set the course and the manager will row the boat. It's very important that the leader touches the heart, and the manager is actually managing the resources. He's putting together the project plan, executing the project plan. So that's what the focus of the manager is, whereas the leader is looking at, is the team motivated? Are they inspired? Is the morale high in the team? Are we executing the bigger vision? Are we moving closer to the bigger vision? Whereas the manager is looking at the project schedules. And both are needed, don't get me wrong. I think the manager is as important as the leader. Every team member in the team is important to execute the vision. It's pieces of the puzzle. It's just the roles are different, and each one should stick to their roles and execute their roles to be successful. Stephen Covey's quote comes to mind, management is efficiency in climbing the ladder. Leadership determines if the ladder is leaning against the right wall. So I think that's really profound.
I love that one.
That's a very interesting quote.
Yeah, say it again. I love that one.
Management is efficiency in climbing the ladder. Leadership determines if the ladder is leaning against the right wall.
Oh, that's perfect. Hey, we can stop right now. That was great. But I think that leads into the next, you know, in terms of finding the right wall and finding your vision and then figuring out best ways to execute. I think a lot of that comes from being mentored and sort of having someone help you, you know, reach all of those things. Tell me, talk a little bit about mentorship and finding mentors and what the value, what does a mentor provide? You already talked about support groups, you know, keeping you honest, but tell me about mentorship.
I think mentoring is so important, but it's very hard to find a good mentor because people do not have time. But mentoring will play a key role in defining our success. There is no question about it. I always say that if you have a challenge and if you're depending on your teammate in the next cube or in your next office, then you're probably asking the wrong person. Because he or she is probably going through the same challenges you are and he doesn't know how to execute. I think it's a good idea to seek people that you want to become like to be your mentors. And it's very hard to find them. But one huge example which happened in my life too is, and I won't mention any names, but I was thinking if this person would be my mentor, wow, it'll be really great. And then a friend of mine encouraged me to just ask, go and ask. You don't have anything to lose. And I asked him, and he agreed to be my mentor. So I think the key is sometimes also the fear of hearing a no. For me, I'm saying, what if they say no, no big deal. We are in the same position as we are now. But if they say yes, then it's huge because of the experience they have had, and they can connect us to the right people. And get things done much faster. We can go to them for counsel and advice. It's huge. It's huge value. So I encourage everyone to actually first figure out who's the right mentor for us, and that's based on our purpose, based on our vision, where are we going. Always think about what is going to be said in my memorial service. You know, that's what we want to execute on. It might look funny, but I think it's a very interesting way to think about what your life goal is, and mentors play a key part. So my encouragement to you is we need to go ask. First of all, find who could be our mentors and then go ask.
Got it. Interesting. So how, let's see, I'm just trying to think, if you don't quite have your vision yet, how do you go about finding the right mentor?
I think, obviously, if you don't know where you're going, then I think I would rather say that first figure out where we are going, because we don't want to waste time, and we don't want to waste anybody else's time, too. And because the mentors who have really made it and who have been successful in the area that you want to be successful in, they don't have the time, and they are going to look for what have you accomplished. Have you started accomplishing your vision? I think that's the question they will ask, because they'll probably give you 15 minutes to talk to see what you have done on your own merit to move in that direction, and then they will say, okay, I'll help you to get where you want to go. But if you just depend on them, they are not going to do it. So we better have our vision in place before we try to get mentors. Maybe when we don't have our vision, we probably need mentors to advise us as to how to capture the vision.
Got it. So how many mentors should somebody have? I typically go for one, but do you think you should have more than one?
I think that's a very interesting question. This is my opinion. My opinion is we need mentors in different areas of our life. And it's not only the professional area. There is also the family. And we could have mentors in different areas. And we could also be mentors to others as we learn. I think that's the key. As we learn, we also keep giving. and make this world a better place. I would say 2 to 3 mentors definitely is a good idea. I do have 2 or 3 mentors actually now. 2 of them are leadership trainers and gurus in leadership, and I've published several books and all that. And I don't bother them too many times. I think that's the key we need to understand. We cannot just keep calling them for every small thing. I think we have to value their time and meet them once in a quarter and just update them what you're doing and keep going.
I like it. That's also a nice approach and a good way to do things. I appreciate it. What have we not talked about in terms of moving forward? I think the one thing you wanted to talk about was how to eliminate the impact of weaknesses in a team.
Sure. I think that's always a very interesting question. Obviously, everyone has strengths and weaknesses. I think one story comes to mind, actually. There was this leadership trainer who recently passed away. I forget his name. But anyway, he was actually in his last speech, and one person raised his hand and asked the question, what is the most important role of a leader? And it was Peter Drucker, by the way. And Peter Drucker was very, very old at this time. He was sitting down, and he didn't respond for a few minutes, so people actually thought, what happened? But anyway, after a couple of minutes, he stood up and said, putting the right people in the right roles. And he sat down. So it is the responsibility of a leader to actually put the people in the right roles. It's so critical to do that.
So it's really the leader's responsibility to create the right managers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think even Good to Great is a wonderful book which talks about putting the right people in the right places in the bus, getting the wrong people off the bus, and putting the right people in the right seats. And it's so powerful to put the right people in the right roles, because that's when they'll start executing. And the leader needs to understand the strengths and weaknesses and leverage their strengths. And another principle I would like to share is put your best people on the best opportunities, not the worst problems, you know. Because we tend to put the best people on the most complex problems, but it's better to put the best people on the best opportunities to maximize it.
Got it. Thank you. Hey, Cyril, this was great, and a really good preface on what you're doing and what your book's about and so forth. And let me let you talk a little bit about how people can reach you to ask questions, to potentially talk about mentorship and other things. And this is the right time for the audience to think about if you have a particular question. I've got a couple that were sent to me, so I'm happy to ask them for you. But if you have a particular question, this is the time to hit the *6 on your button, and that'll unmute you. And so why don't you talk about how do we reach you? How do people?
Sure. I have a blog on leadership, and I've been writing on and off on the blog. It's just CyrilRyan.com, myname.com. And you can definitely get my contact information there, and you can email me or call me for any questions.
And so that's Cyril, C-Y-R-I-L, Ryan, R-A-Y-A-N.com.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else in terms of people contacting you?
I think that all the information is there. I also have a book website called movingfromvisiontoreality.com, and all the information is there about the seminars that I have developed. I also teach at a couple of universities and one Bible college, and it's interesting. I think leadership is a fascinating topic, and we are all learning and continue to grow as leaders.
Oh, absolutely. So. Does anyone have questions, or do you want me to ask a couple of questions that came in? If somebody has a question, please pipe in. Otherwise, I'll be happy to ask. All right. I've got 3 different questions that came in, so let me pick one of them. This actually was my favorite. Sorry for those that asked the other two. How do we differentiate vision from daydreaming? I knew it would make you laugh. That's why I liked it the most. So.
I think the key is we need to bounce off our visions with people whom we respect and who are our mentors, and especially also based on the vision, which area is the vision in. We definitely need to find experts in that field, bounce it off with them, and see the validity of the vision, because obviously there might be many ideas, and I don't want to qualify it as daydreaming, but some ideas might not be relevant. So I really think once you have the vision, you write it down, that's the key, and then share it, not with everyone, but with people you respect and people who mentor you to really validate it, and that's how you can differentiate.
It's an interesting one. Let's dissect that a little bit more. Because so if you're sitting there and you're daydreaming, because I actually think the differentiation between a daydream and a vision, at some point in time, they're probably the same. Because my guess is you would, unless you get your vision at night when you're sleeping, you're daydreaming to actually come up with your vision.
Okay.
Right? I mean, I'm not sure. I'm just trying to think about that, unless it's handed to you. So then the question is, A, you got to write it down. So I like that one. You know, you got to write it down. You got to have it available to you. But then what else? It's got to be, in listening to your answer, it's got to be real, right? Mm-hmm. So real means it either is physically accomplishable or that you're the one who's going to act on it. And this is what you were saying at the beginning of the conversation. Mm-hmm. You're going to act on it and make it accomplishable.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the vision could be really huge, and that's fine, because another quote comes to mind is, if you can accomplish your vision with your paycheck, it's not a God-given vision, you know? So the vision could be huge, but I think the key is, can you validate it by having certain steps that you can do to accomplish it? And also, is the need real? And so we need to validate it with the people in the space, also people you know who are well-respected. So let me give an example. Let's say the vision is for a nonprofit and helping troubled teens in the Bay Area, right? And I think there are students of mine and actually running with a similar vision. But anyway, what I'm saying is, then I think we need to connect with the people who are familiar with these activities, these kind of ministries, and see how we can execute and what are the key needs that are there so that we can run with it.
Got it. Interesting. And I thought that was a good question. I think it's one that a number of us will ponder.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly would say I think daydreaming is a great thing. And then writing it down and executing, maybe that's what turns it into a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay, well, we have another one here, and that is, in following your vision and seeking affirmation from the Lord, many say it is from God all things will fall into place without hassle and conflict. What are your thoughts on this thinking?
I think in accomplishing the vision, there will be challenges. There is no question about it. Things won't fall in place like you want it. With all the help from the Lord, there will be challenges. That vision will be tested. We'll have to persevere with the vision to accomplish the vision. So that's my thought on that.
Got it. Interesting. Do we have any other questions from people out there?
I have a question.
Oh, please.
I didn't chime in because I was 5 minutes late logging on, but my name is Lisa Roman Stadgy. I actually took, I'm a graduate from the Jubilee Bible College, and I took Cyril's class, Moving from Vision to Reality. He taught there, and that's where I first got to know him. Well, not really. He just taught the class, but I have a question about your book and writing your book. I do have... I'm actually working on a book, and I'm just getting started. I really believe that this is the direction that the Lord's taking me in, and it's been really interesting because I'm starting to interview people for a lot of topics of the book, and I was wondering how you actually, did you write your own book or did you have someone else write it for you?
I wrote my own book. Actually, it started as a project to write articles, and when I was asked to speak at a leadership conference in India, that's when I realized as I was preparing that this is a book. That was in Jan 2004. And then, of course, I didn't, it was on the back burner, and I worked on it on and off. And in December 2005 or 2006, one of my friends, who's also an author, really encouraged me to just finish it. So he challenged me to finish it, and also I got an opportunity to teach at Jubilee Bible College. So Pastor Adam also encouraged me to finish the book. So I took it up as a challenge. And interestingly enough, I met Mitchell in February when I was finishing my book at a networking event. And that's how the book got published. So it was very interesting. It was very interesting the way things moved.
Well, it's kind of what I found fascinating is by the time I actually got the final manuscript, you still hold the record for the quickest time to market for any book, Cyril. Because we don't promise this ever, but we took 3 weeks from the time we got the final manuscript to we actually had the book at Jubilee College.
Right.
So it was meant to be because it's hard to move that fast on any of our projects.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you spend just a couple minutes talking about what's involved if the vision that somebody has is writing a book? Why don't you talk a couple minutes on actually how do you go about doing that? And then I'll give you a quick thing on how to contact us as a potential publisher. So.
Sure. I think writing a book definitely can be intimidating, but I think we need to get started. That's the key. And in fact, if you have already written articles or something, I think that's what happened to me, that I realized that this could be a book. But start writing, and I think that's the key, and write regularly, though I didn't do that myself, but I think if I do it the second time around, which I probably will, I think one of the things that I would do is write on a regular basis and have a certain time that you write, like every weekday for a half an hour or 1 hour, and just write. I mean, obviously, the first time you write the draft, it's not going to look very good, but put down your thoughts. And in fact, I would definitely like to acknowledge Frank Mitchell, who's a very good friend of mine, and is probably also on the call, who helped me, who's my writing coach, and also helped me to edit the book. So definitely, it's a team work. Of course, the ideas you come up with and you've seen, you've read, and collect things that you read and so that you can relate to it, especially quotes and other things. I love to collect quotes, and quotes really inspire us anyway, but also they help in writing and making a particular point. So writing regularly and taking that step of faith to start writing, and then have people around you who can help in editing and in giving other ideas and refining. And it's a team effort. And then go find Mitchell and Happy About to publish it.
I appreciate that. We are always looking for authors and interesting topics to publish. With us, the best way to start is the email that I've already given before, info@happyabout.info. Just send a request asking for the 6 questions. So we don't have a formal book publishing process we're looking for in terms of, the request for us to do a book. We have 6 questions we want you to answer. And if you answer the 6 questions, we'll then make a quick decision and have a conversation with you on whether or not we want to publish or not. And we do have and that email address is info@happyabout.info. And I just thought I'd mention, we have a new book series that I thought I would share with everyone, and because it's such an easy way to write a book. The book series is called 42 Rules, and we've got a number of books, 42 Rules of Marketing, 42 Rules of Calling Execs. One that I might want to point out is 42 Rules for Working Moms. Because what's fascinating about that book is that each of the chapters are written by somebody else. So the 42 Rules book, it's a 108-page book. There are 42 chapters, each of the 42 rules. The first and last rule is always the same. So you basically have 40 chapters, which are somewhere around 500 words. So if you've been consistently writing a blog for 40 weeks, you've got the book done. What's interesting about the Working Moms book, it was 42 outside moms who talked about the balance between work life and home life. And so, Cyril, what I was thinking is you might have someone who wants to take up the charge of writing the 42 rules of moving from vision to reality.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine going out to 40 successful people and just doing a quick interview with them saying, hey, how did you accomplish your vision?
Right.
And that's the book. So anyhow, if anyone wanted to do that, obviously they'd need to get Cyril's permission as well as ours to do that. But it'd be a fun way to write a book is to interview 40 successful people and ask them how they move from vision to reality.
Mm-hmm. I actually did one of those interviews. Mitchell, I'll probably forward you a link to it.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
We do have another question that came in, and this is another one that sort of would make you laugh. And this was, any thoughts on teams that have competing leaders? What if 90% try to lead instead of 10%? Who's going to follow?
I think the committee approach sometimes can really be the approach to failure, you know. There should be clearly defined leadership, and leaders will emerge in a group. If you put people together in a small group, within 2 minutes you can say, oh, this is the leader who's emerging. And I think the key ground rule that everyone needs to understand is we might not agree with everything that the leader says, but we have to align for success. And I think the failure in teams mostly happens because people are not aligned with the leader, not aligned with the group goal, and that can really create chaos.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I used to always say that the leader is the person who takes the notes and schedules the next meeting. But in looking at your definition, that would really be the manager. It's the person who takes the notes and schedules the next meeting. The leader's the one with the vision who's basically pulling the people around them to make sure they execute the vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So how do you, like I said, if you got into a room, this is a great question, get in a room, you got 10 people, and 9 people want to lead. How do you fix that? What are the steps people take?
I think the key is to get an agreement in the team as to what we are trying to accomplish. And there will be a couple of people who can take leadership in that discussion, and the leader will emerge. I think if there are very strong people and type A people in the room, and out of the 10, 9 are type A, and everybody is trying to make their point. But I think at the end of the day, there will be a leader who emerges, who understands the situation, who understands where the team needs to go, and who can cast that vision for the team, and that's how the leader will emerge.
Interesting. Thank you. Is there anyone else? I got a couple more questions that came in, but I wanted to make sure that if somebody had a question they want to ask live, that they can do that. Anyone want to hit the star 6 and then talk? All right. So here's another one I think will make you laugh. What are your thoughts about men mentoring women?
Very interesting question.
That didn't make you laugh. Okay, you're taking this one seriously.
I think it is okay. It is okay to do that as long as both people feel comfortable, because in some cases there might be situations where the vision that you want to accomplish, there might not be other women, or you might just prefer to be talking to a male mentor. I think that doesn't really matter as long as we have the right mentor in place.
So you don't have an issue particularly. So I guess this would be a woman who's wondering whether or not her mentor can be a man.
Right.
Right. So I guess if I was going to help you answer that one, my suggestion might be one of the things you said before is that you should consider having more than one mentor.
Sure.
You know, and that, because I would say the world different depending on your religion, your religious practices, your sex, your creed. And so having somebody who actually understands you for who you are is probably one of the mentors you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's just in that world, women, I think, are particularly better at mentoring each other than men are. And there are a number of women-only mentoring groups that are certainly worth participating in. So I would certainly give that some time.
Sure. But my point was there might, let's say, somebody is trying to become a leadership trainer. I'm just giving an example, a woman leadership trainer, and that person has access to John Maxwell. And so might as well have John Maxwell as your mentor. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there might be some in some situations where you have a compelling reason why somebody should be a mentor, and in that case, I think it shouldn't matter.
Right. Makes sense. So I've got one more, which I think you'll enjoy. It says, please give ideas and suggestions on how to market oneself, project, vision, business, et cetera. So this is the, how do you start getting a vision out to the world?
I think, of course, I also teach marketing courses and all that. But bottom line, I think it's the passion that you have for the vision. That's the key. And if you are passionate about the vision, you will talk about it to almost everyone you meet. And of course, it should be relevant at some point. But I think I've seen people who are so passionate, they will share their heart with people they meet. And that's what happens. And that's how you get the word out. And of course, initially, you have to first create the passion in your team. And it's not easy to put together a good team, as I said before. But first, communicate effectively. First of all, write the vision down for yourself and keep it succinct. And then write it down and share with the team so that they know where we are headed. And then continue to share with mentors and possible partners and so on and so forth. And things will start rolling. And of course, if it is a business, then obviously you need to have a marketing plan in place. In terms of what your target market is, what your segmentation is, what are the key things that you need to address to get the word out and market the product.
Got it. Is there any other questions that that people might have? So, Cyril, why don't you do a, if you don't mind, why don't you wrap up sort of your thoughts? What do you think the those that are listening on the line, those that have sent in questions, what do you think they should do? Give me the couple step wrap up here.
Right. I think we all should continue to pursue our development as leaders. I think that's the key, and also be bold in acting on our dreams and vision, take a step out of the boat, because if we don't take a step out of the boat, we will not know whether we can walk on water or not. So I think that's the key. I would like to share a few principles of leadership, if we have time, Mitchell, which are really key to...
No, yeah, please do.
Key for us to start executing as leaders. And this actually comes from a book my mentor wrote, and I've added one more principle to it on my own, but here it goes, and I'll finish it in 2 or 3 minutes. First one is challenging the process. Basically, we are not challenging the people, but we are challenging the process, asking the question as to how we can improve what we are doing. Secondly, inspiring a shared vision. I think the key point here is shared. Is the vision that you have in your heart a shared vision? Do you have others on your team who believe it is their vision also, and it's our vision concept. The third principle is enabling others to act. I think there are several industries in the Valley and beyond where we know micromanagement is the name of the game, and I have been there myself, but we need to really give the space for others to act, give them their space to think on their own and to execute. So that way we can enable them to act. The fourth one is modeling the way. I think we need to be a servant leader. We need to serve the vision. We need to serve the people on the team so that the vision can happen. It's not about being the boss. It's about being the servant. And then encouraging the heart. Everybody wants to have a word of encouragement. Everyone feels good when they are praised. We need to give the respect where it is due, and we need to encourage the heart. And finally, the one which I added is fostering innovation, and I think we talked about that. That's really important in any team, any project that we go about. We need to foster innovation, create that element of creativity, allow people to be creative, not only the top management team, but everyone on board, and we can definitely be effective leaders and driving visions which are huge and changing nations.
Super. Cyril, thank you so much. This has been great. If you want to reach Cyril Ryan, you could reach him through his blog, CyrilRyan.com. The book, Moving from Vision to Reality, is available at Amazon bookstores nationwide, as well as at happyabout.info. We are always looking for authors, so certainly feel free to send an email asking for the 6 questions at info@happyabout.info. And I thank you so much for your participation today. Have a great day, and I encourage you to move your vision to reality. Hi, anyone still there? Sorry. All right, bye now.